The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the ESPN FC studios and today's edition of the show. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. We're going to be looking back at Champions League, looking ahead to the weekend. Julien Laurent, Frank Leboeuf are going to join us as we preview Saturday's El Clásico between Barcelona and Real Madrid. But we're going to start the show talking Manchester United, coming off that big victory against PSG and looking ahead towards the weekend at Chelsea. For more, we welcome in Stuart Robson, Don Hutchison, and Shaka Hislop. Gentlemen, great to have you with us. Robbo, I'm going to start with you on Manchester United because you called their match against PSG. How is it that we account for this turnaround? A team that lost six against Spurs, played terrible against Brighton but won, lost to Crystal Palace, and suddenly against the Champions League finalists, not only do they win, Robbo, but I think we all have to admit they won convincingly.
Well, they did everything right in terms of their defensive side of the game. They decided when to press the ball at the right time. They dropped off at the right time and stayed compact. The back three, which he changed to, all played well. Lindelof led the line. The goalkeeper had an inspired game as well. Made some two or three good saves and was good with the ball at his feet. The two holding midfield players, McTominay and Fred, did their job superbly when Neymar went that little bit deeper. And you had Wan-Bissaka, who matched Mbappe for pace down one side. And I thought Telles did well down the other side. So all in all, their defensive display was excellent. And then they were a threat on the counter-attack. And when they needed to, just after half-time, when PSG started to dominate the game, you have to give the manager a bit of credit. He changed the system. He brought Pogba on. They went to a diamond. And they gained control of the game, gained control of it again. So I would say it was a good all-round performance from Manchester United.
Don, any improvement from Manchester United obviously has to do with their defense. Stevie Nicol on yesterday's show kind of joked that one of the reasons they were so good against PSG is Pogba wasn't in the lineup. Not only Pogba wasn't in the lineup, you didn't have Maguire in the lineup. There's a little bit of truth in every joke, right? Like, how much did those absences make United better defensively?
Yeah, I think Stevie's got a point. At the same time, I don't think Pogba should ever be playing anywhere near, you know, his own centre-halves. He's a player that should be playing further up the pitch to try and get and support the strikers and doing what he is good at, getting goals, getting assists and creating things. They've looked a little bit more solid of late over the last couple of games when Fred and McTominay have been there because they're more of a defensive screen. So I think the defenders behind that screen in midfield, I think they can relax a little bit more knowing they've got Fred and McTominay who are going to work and have the industry just in front of them. So there's a little bit of truth in it. At the same time, when you're picking, you know, your best Man United side to try and get you a big result, Pogba would be in that 11.
Shaka, let's talk Manchester United big picture. It seems pretty clear when they play teams that they're supposed to have the ball against, they don't do well. When they can sit back and counter, they do exceptionally well even against better competition. It's a formula that works, but is the fact that they really only have that one play in their playbook a problem for United?
Yes, it is, especially given who we're talking about. This is Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in world football, and a team that's expected to take the game to 99% of their domestic opposition. So when you see the performance against PSG, when you see players stepping up and turning in performances like you've not seen for some time. Transebe comes in and is simply outstanding. David De Gea had his best 90 minutes that we've seen for quite some time. But then when United come up against PSG, they are underdogs. You aren't, the manager doesn't have to sell this game in terms of motivation to them. And you see so many of these players kind of be at their best. Whereas when you come up against the Brightons or the Crystal Palaces and you are looking for leaders to inspire this team, everybody in that dressing room just seems to be looking around. We've said this in the past, that's a team devoid of leadership. It shows in the smaller games. You don't need to lead on that kind of leadership when things are going your way, and things were certainly going Manchester United's way. And I don't mean that in any disrespect. They earned everything that they got against PSG. They earned Lady Luck to be smiling on them with the retake of the penalty. But that's Manchester United in 1% of their games. Too many times they've been found wanting when they need to be stepping up.
Robbo, if we can, right back to Pogba real quick. Don says it. Pogba has to be included in any Manchester United's best 11. But yet we've seen over the last couple of weeks that's not always the case for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's making tactical decisions to leave Pogba out. Would you put him in the best 11?
Yeah, but he also made a tactical decision to bring him on at the right time, and he played him in the left-hand side of that midfield diamond, and he changed the game when he came on, along with the other midfield players, because they were being overrun the first 10, 15 minutes of that second half. Pogba is still an outstanding player. He's a World Cup winner. On his day, he can pick passes, he can do everything you want from a midfield player. He's inconsistent. That's been his problem. He's inconsistent with his fitness. I think he's inconsistent with his work rate. That's what he's got to improve. And if he does that, he'll be in every team that he plays for. He'll be in the France team every week. He'll be in the Manchester United team every week.
Robbo, one more player that really jumped out is Tuan Zebe. 10 months out of action. He's 22 years old. Is this guy the answer for all the centre half issues at United?
It's one game. I mean, he played very, very well. He looked as though he had a lot of pace. He made good decisions, you know, when to drop off, when to squeeze up. He did well against Neymar when Neymar went that little bit deeper. I thought he had an outstanding game. I think he'll probably play at the weekend as well. But there's still other players to come back. When you look at Bailly, I'm always a little bit worried about Bailly's ability on the ball. Maguire is still a very good player. He's had a bad time for 2 or 3 weeks or 6 weeks. He's a very good player. I think Tuan Zebe will be a squad player rather than a player that's going to play week in, week out.
Don, let's turn our attention forward to the weekend. Manchester United gets Chelsea. We talked about their kind of only approach that they have, sit back and counter. Do you expect to see that again against Chelsea? And is it the right call for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
I think so, Seb. I think when you look at Man United's best performances over the last year, I can remember a couple of performances in the Premier League, and one was against Man City and the other against Spurs, and they were both inside the same week, and they were outstanding. They didn't see much of the ball. They played counter-attacking football. They'd done that, I think, on match day one last season when they battered Chelsea with the scoreline, even though Chelsea played well in the game. So I think it's the way forward, and that's the next evolution for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The boys talked about when they play the likes of Crystal Palace and the likes of Brighton, when they've got all of the ball, they seem to struggle that little bit more. And when they haven't got the ball, they're so good on the counter. They're so pacey at the top end of the pitch. You know, they're a threat for anyone. I mean, I commentated on Chelsea-Southampton last week, and Chelsea, for 45 minutes, said they looked like Brazil. They were unbelievable for 45 minutes, but you sat there commentating on the game and you knew they were fragile, and you just had the feeling if Southampton got one, which they did, they were back in the game. And then at the end, Chelsea were hanging on to a 3-2 and drew that 3-3. So we're seeing some crazy results all across Europe.
Don, let's go to the other side of this matchup then. If everybody in the world knows what Manchester United is going to do, how should Chelsea approach this match? Because we've seen two very different Chelseas of late. We've seen the 3-3 against Southampton, where they were dangerous but vulnerable. And then we saw the 0-0 against Sevilla, where they kept the Sevilla team pretty much in check.
Yeah, it's a hard one for Frank. I think that was 60-odd games in his first 0-0, so that was quite of a bizarre stat. But you know, I think at the top end of the pitch, we won't see too much change. Timo Werner, after his brace against Southampton, will probably lead the line. He's got, you know, Christian Pulisic, as I said, for 45 minutes. He was fantastic alongside Mason Mount and Kai Havertz. Central midfield, I would imagine it will be Jorginho and Kante. Kovacic is trying to push for a place, but I don't think he gets in that team just yet. It's the two centre-halves that I keep looking at with Chelsea and Frank. And he's got an idea of his best pairing. I don't agree with Frank. I think his best pairing is Thiago Silva and Antonio Rudiger, who can't get anywhere near the matchday squad at the moment. So it's looking like Kurt Zouma. So I don't see too much change. But I always worry when I see a manager making that many changes to a back four. And there's been so many changes.
Shaka, from the Chelsea perspective here, right call to allow Manchester United to sit back and counter when you know that that's the way that they're going to beat you? That's the way that they've competed with teams just like you for the last few months?
I think that's the only call Frank Lampard can make, given how suspect Chelsea have been defensively for quite some time. And yes, and I know you mentioned how they keep things tight against Sevilla, but Chelsea have always approached their club football and their European football totally differently. Given what we saw against Southampton, if I'm Manchester United, I know that I'm going to get chances against Chelsea. I just have to keep things tight at the other end. From Frank Lampard's perspective, they are at their best when they're playing on the front foot, when they're pressing the ball high up, when they're trying to keep you as far away from their defensive third as possible. So that has to be their approach. So I think this game plan is kind of spelled out for both managers.
Robbo, what do you think? More smart or stubborn for Lampard to stick to his guns, play the way they have, or make an adjustment against this United team?
The hardest thing for any coach is to get the balance right between attacking football and defensive football. You get your attacking side of the game right and you struggle defensively. The next week you say, we're going to work harder at the defensive side of the game, and then you struggle in the attacking areas like they did against Sevilla. I think he's going to stick with very much the same formation that he's been playing. He'll be on the front foot as much as he can. But what he has to do is make sure the defenders are concentrating. When they lost that goal against Southampton, Kai Havertz loses the ball quite a long way out from the goal. The two centre-halves aren't concentrating. Suddenly the ball gets played in between them and Southampton go and score. That's what he's got to make sure the centre-halves and the midfield players and the full-backs are doing. When the ball changes hands, they've got to switch on. They're too loose at the moment and they're not concentrating enough. That's the only thing that's wrong with Chelsea's defending at the moment.
Big game for Kai Havertz, Don.
Yeah, it is. And he's looking really sharp. It's took him a little bit of time to get going. I watched him, I think it was against Brighton on match day one, and he sort of wafted around the pitch and he glided around the pitch and he was a little bit slow and a little bit casual, but he's picking up the speed of the game. Hakim Ziyech come on in that Southampton game and he was exactly the same, Seb. He came on for 15, 20 minutes and every time he took a touch, he was so slow, and before he knew it, there was three Southampton players wrapped around him. So, you know, the Premier League is one of the speediest leagues, you know, across Europe, and it takes a little bit of time. So it is a big game for Kai Havertz. The eyes are always going to be on him because of the size of the transfer fee. But I see the kid being a superstar. I really do. I don't see many flaws in his game. He's just going to take a little bit of time.
Speaking of the Premier League, we got our first look at the reigning champions, Robbo, without Virgil van Dijk in the midweek against Ajax. They get a clean sheet away from home in Europe. How optimistic should Liverpool fans be after that performance, given how pessimistic they were in the hours before?
Yeah, they got the result against Ajax, but I thought Ajax had a lot of the game. They were able to counter-attack. They were able to play through Liverpool a little bit too easily at times. Yes, Fabinho made that clearance off the line, but it was his mistake in the first place by not reading the ball being played over the top. He allowed the centre-forward to get in behind him. So I think they had slight problems in the game against Ajax. Usually their pressing game is much better higher up the field. They not usually played through. So that's something that Jurgen Klopp's going to have to get right. If they can get the pressing game right and they can get their midfield players winning the ball back in the right areas, they don't have to worry so much about what's going on at the back. They just have to read the danger. But that wasn't the case against Ajax, so I'd be still slightly worried about how Liverpool defended in that game against Ajax, even though they got a clean sheet.
Yeah, Don, Fabinho was exceptional in the match. Robbo mentioned the goal line clearance turned in pretty much a man of the match performance. Is he actually Liverpool's best centre half right now?
I think he probably is. I mean, I've played that position where you go from central midfield and you go back and play centre half, and actually it's a lot easier because you understand, you can see all the game in front of you. You understand when midfield players are making the runs in behind. You know, you spot the runs very quickly. And he knows the game, Fabinho. He's been at Monaco where he's played at centre-half. He's played at right-back. He's obviously played as a 6 and an 8 in midfield. So once he steps back into that centre-half berth, I think the game comes very easy to him. I think he's got a turn of pace. He's very aggressive in the tackle. He's very cute as well. Seb, I think he gives tactical fouls away, so teams can never really get any rhythm when he plays there. So I think that's going to be his position for quite a while.
Shaka, one position we haven't talked about too much Liverpool recently is in goal. Any Liverpool fan I talk to, they talk about the nerves when Adrian is near the ball. Do you have any questions about how long this can be sustained without Alisson?
I have a lot of questions about how long this can be sustained without Alisson. Adrian is a number two, can come in and give you a decent game or two, maybe three, but you don't want him playing any longer than that. I just feel that his uncertainty kind of seeps through to the rest of the back four. So you can't have him playing any extended period of time. Eventually he catches up. Those nerves are telling. I've said this before. I've said this about a number of different goalkeepers. There's a big difference between being a number two and being a number one. If Alisson is out for any period of time, any longer, that's going to cost Liverpool, especially without Van Dijk in part as part of that back four. Liverpool have to get Alisson back sooner rather than later if they want to mount a credible challenge to or defense of their title.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Liverpool in action Saturday against Sheffield United. Plenty more discussion leading into the Premier League weekend on tomorrow's show. We're talking United-Chelsea, El Clásico as well. So much to look forward to this weekend.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Spanish press has its proverbial knives out after Real Madrid's shocking home defeat 3-2 against Shakhtar Donetsk on Wednesday in the Champions League. Marca. Cada día peor, every day worse. Mundo calling it the nightmare before El Clásico. For more, we welcome in Frank Leboeuf and Julien Laurent. Jules, I'll start with you. How do we explain what we saw in this match? You've got the defending champions of Spain, and you've got a Donetsk team that was missing, what, like six starters, 13 players total? And you would not have known from watching any of this match, and certainly the first 30 minutes, where Madrid were just pathetic.
It was a horror show, you're right. I mean, what struck me the most, and it was exactly the same against Cadiz at the weekend in La Liga when they also lost at home to the promoted side, was the mentality, the attitude of the players. They looked like they underestimated this Shakhtar team, who had, as you said, six or seven starters who were missing, a lot of youngsters who had never played at that kind of level, certainly not against a team of the level of Real Madrid. And yet, the Real Madrid players didn't want it. They were not hungry. They were just sloppy. There was no much movement. There was no energy. There was nothing. And on the other hand, Shakhtar had everything that Real Madrid didn't have. Surely less talent, but they had a lot of desire, especially going forward. They had a great game plan, which, again, I didn't think Real Madrid had. And that's why he showed so much, especially in that first half. But even in the second half, I thought Shakhtar had two, three clear chances to score even more goals. And I just thought it was embarrassing once again, like it was at the weekend. And if I was Zinedine Zidane, I would be very, very, very worried that there's something wrong going there, whether it's him, whether it's the dressing room, whether it's a bit of both. Certainly a bit of both, but it's just not looking good for them at all.
Frank, of all the players that maybe didn't cover themselves in glory, Rafael Varane, how do we understand what is happening with this player? Champions League winner, World Cup winner, and yet it seems like when Sergio Ramos is not there, his level doesn't just drop. It falls off the face of the earth. What does that say about Varane?
Well, you know, he had a very, very good World Cup, a wonderful World Cup when he played on a very defensive side, France, the national team, and he did very, very well. But Real Madrid is different, and you're right. When the big captain, Sergio Ramos, is not next to him, Rafael Varane seems to be very lost. And it's what happened many times, you know, since the beginning of the season, where we saw him, you know, doing big mistakes, losing his confidence, and not knowing where he was, in fact. And it's mostly because Ramos is not there. I mean, the leader of the defense is Sergio Ramos. The leader of Real Madrid is Sergio Ramos. And when he's not around, Varane is lost, but the rest of the team is as well, because they don't do what they have to do. And when you don't have any leadership, a real leader inside, on the field, sorry, you are lost. And Varane is like those. He's becoming, let's say, an average player, with all due respect, without Sergio Ramos. So he has to react, like all the team has to react, because that was really appalling what we saw on the first half.
Jules, let's talk about the rest of those players. Usually I'd ask you who stood out. This time when I ask you who stood out from Real Madrid, individually, who stood out in the negative for you in this match?
I don't know where to start. I mean, on Varane, the thing I would say is that let's not forget that on one side he had Eder Militao and on the other side he had Marcelo. And I think he's not Superman. That's all I'm saying. I just wanted to defend him a little bit and put that out there. On the negative, who was the worst? I mean, I don't know. I thought Fede Valverde doesn't look like the player he was last season. Same with Casemiro. I thought Marcelo, again, I'm sorry, but I know he's club captain. I know he's been there for many years. I know he achieved great things in that club and with Brazil and everything you want. He was a great player one day, but I'm sorry, this is not good enough. This is just not good enough anymore. I mean, Ferland Mendy had to play at right back because they've got no right backs left available, apart from Nacho, who was on the bench. But even Ferland Mendy is a better right back than all the right backs that they still have left at the club right now who can play in that position. So I just thought it was, like I said, a horror show. I don't want to single out anyone who was worse than the other because I think that would be a bit unfair, because as a team, like we said, the mentality wasn't there, the attitude wasn't there, the game plan wasn't there. But there was certainly a lot of them who let themselves down and the club down on Wednesday night.
What was the strength of Real Madrid lately? They won games not because they had the possession of the ball. It's because they were strong defensively and they were very good at counter-attacking. It's how they won the Liga last season, I mean, the last summer. And it's how they were very strong. And Jusa's right. Marcelo on the left side, Mendy on the right side, they're not defenders. They've never been and they never will be. It's why I say the importance of Ramos being next to Varane is that at least they have two defenders. And it's true that I've been harsh on Varane, but it's true that it's like he's on his own, especially when Casemiro is like the shadow of himself and Valverde as well. That's the main problem. If Zizou wants to resolve any problem, he has to resolve the defensive mentality of those players who are capable of being a block, where they're not anymore.
Jules, Zidane's starting to get something we haven't seen too much of in Madrid, like real criticism now. Is it justified, do you think?
I think some of it is, of course, justifying. You've just lost to Cadiz and to Shakhtar Donetsk C team. So, of course, it is. You know, it's two defeats in a row. You play the Clásico on Saturday. Let's not forget, though, that last year at a similar time, they also started with a horror show in Paris against PSG in the Champions League. Then there was that draw against Bruges at the Bernabeu, a full, you know, full of fans at the time. So he had a shaky start of last season, too. They had to go to Sevilla, if you remember. And had he lost that game, I think he could have well been sacked. So I think rocky starts, he knows how to handle them. He knows how to, at some point, get the players on board and say, hey, listen, we can't be that, you know, we can't keep playing that badly. We can't be so out of form like this anymore. We can't have the defensive shape that we had in that game against Shakhtar, because they were all over the place. The defensive line was all over the place in that first half. So I want to believe that he will find the words to get this team together and say, listen, look at the criticism that we're getting now. We have the biggest game of the season coming up on Saturday against a team that is not doing that great either. So let's show everyone what we can do. It's very similar for me. Of course, it's a Clásico, but very similar to the game against Sevilla away last season at a similar time.
Frank, I was going to mention before, you know, this comes at the heels of the loss to Cadiz. When a team doesn't respond after a terrible performance, who are you looking at more, the manager or the players?
It depends who you are. And it's easier, it's always easier to put down one man than a whole squad. So Zizou is going to be the main target, and most people is going to be able to hammer him easily because it's easier. Those players want so many things that it's always been hard to make sure they don't get blasé and they keep on working hard. And it's been the biggest challenge for Zizou, and he did it, making them winning the Liga after winning so many things when he just came back. It's absolutely fantastic. But there is a limit of that. It's the edges of players against the stamina of those, and how they're going to be able to handle that pressure of winning all the time while they are at Real Madrid. There is an end of that where maybe it's time to change. Now, of course, it's going to be easy for Florentino Perez to say, okay, it doesn't work anymore. The magical aspect of what Zizou can bring to the club has an end, and it's now, and Zizou is not able to make sure that the player will give 100%. So bye-bye Zizou, and it's going to be easier. What's going to happen after? I'm not sure it's going to work for the next coach. Not sure at all.
One thing we are sure of, Real Madrid very much limping into the Clásico on the weekend. Different story for Barcelona, Jules. They get 5 against Ferencváros, 5 goals, the most that they've scored so far this season. They do it without Antoine Griezmann in the 11. They do it, in fact, without him for 90 minutes. I was listening to the Gavin Jules show, and one of the things you've been hammering on of late is that you've got to give Griezmann a run of games in that 9 spot before you truly judge him. This wouldn't seem to be that, is it?
It'd be very interesting to see, and I think a lot of us either will try to see what's been leaked in the papers on Friday, for example, or Saturday morning even, and then just before the game, trying to text people or call people to see what the lineup is going to be, because I think this one is going to be very, very interesting. What is Koeman going to do? Do you leave Griezmann on the bench? And you can, like you said, he worked against Ferencváros. Although they had a goal disallowed for an offside at 0-0, they hit the post at 0-0 as well. So it was not all great and all rosy. However, you won 5-1, and it's true, you've got that momentum, and that was without Griezmann, five different goal scorers too. So you would think right now, okay, Koeman can well say to Griezmann, listen, you were on the bench, we played really, we did well without you, so you're going to stay on the bench. That's not what I'm getting. That's not what I'm being told. I think Griezmann will be on the pitch. I think he should be on the pitch. Yes, I do think that he should have a run at number 9. If that's where you want him to play, you know, if you want him on the right-hand side, like Koeman said before, no problem. Play him there and have discussions with him, make him work like this at training, and he will improve, he will get better. But if you really want him in what is a favourite position for him, then have him in that number 9, false 9 position with Coutinho or Messi behind him, whoever you want. But I think you need to give him time if you believe in him in that position. That's what I mean, because he wants to play there. And if Koeman is happy with that, then give him a good run. Don't just play him there for an hour or 70 minutes, then take him off, and then the next game playing somewhere else again and things like this. That's not going to work. I think he needs a bit of consistency in where Koeman wants him to play, whether that's on the right, centrally, that's Koeman's to decide. But I think the lineup on Saturday will be quite fascinating.
Right, Frank, based on what we've seen from Barcelona so far this season with Griezmann and what we've seen of Barcelona without Griezmann, do you start him in the Clásico against Madrid?
I don't know if I would love to have that decision, but... it's complicated. Not, of course not. I think he's not in a good shape. But when you're a coach, it's maybe why I'm not going to be a coach forever. It's the fact that you have to be psychologically very good. And to manage your squad, to make sure everybody's going to be spot on and ready to work every time you need him, is that you have maybe to work again psychologically and make sure that you use the rotation to make sure that the players is going to be good enough to be in your squad. So if you want to make sure that you send a message to Griezmann, I don't want you anymore, after not playing him, not even putting him in substitution during the Champions League, if you don't put him in a Clásico, it's going to be the end of Griezmann. Mm. And I think Griezmann will ask to leave in a winter time. And that's what it is. Because the message will be clear. I don't need you. I don't want you. I don't want to use you. So therefore, bye-bye. It's why I think Griezmann's going to play, because I think Koeman, well, if he wants Griezmann to stay, we'll use him.
Jules, what do you make of what Frank says, that a no start or not playing in this game could signal the end of Griezmann's time at Barcelona, and even as soon as this winter?
I mean, there's obviously a long way to go between now and January and the transfer window. There's a lot of things can happen. I think Antoine would be obviously very, very disappointed if he was not starting against Real Madrid on Saturday. I believe that right now he thinks he will start, he will play, and I think he should. He should approach that game like he's a starter in that team, like he's an important player, because I think the issue right now is the lack of confidence. We saw with France a different Antoine Griezmann, because clearly the confidence level with Deschamps and with the players in the national team is very different than when he goes back to Barcelona. And I think for him to play with confidence, he needs to have this approach of like, okay, I'm a very important player for this club. They paid a lot of money for me. I earn loads of money in wages. I can do better than what I did last year, even if sometimes I'm playing not in my best position or not in my favorite positions. I think he has to be in this mindset. Otherwise, it's not going to work. What happens if he doesn't start on Saturday? I don't know. I don't know if that meant the end for him at Barcelona. I don't believe so. I think, like we said, Messi is closer to the end of his career than to the beginning. He wanted to leave last summer. What happens if Messi leaves this summer coming? Then I think they would be very happy to have Antoine Griezmann and maybe rebuild that team around Griezmann, around Pedri and Ansu Fati and Griezmann and players like that. So I think it would be very dangerous for them to get rid of Griezmann in January, for example. They're not keeping him. I find this all fascinating since he joined from Atletico Madrid, even since the summer before when he didn't join them from Atletico Madrid and decided to stay, and the whole decision documentary and everything. It's been an incredible, if you think about it, an incredible 2 years and something.
We started the segment looking at the reaction from the Spanish press to Real Madrid's defeat in the Champions League. Well, the French press, not any easier on PSG following their 2-1 home loss against Manchester United. L'Equipe going with the title. Unrecognizable. Jules, with your PSG ways, how bad was that performance?
I thought it was shocking. I really did. And they stayed in the game. They came back in the game. It was 1-1 until the 87th minute. But I thought in terms of performances, in terms of game plan, in terms of the tactical battle between Solskjaer on one side and Thomas Tuchel on the other side, there was no match. United were by far the better team. They were better prepared. They were hungrier. They were more aggressive. They had a proper game plan with the back five and then with the back four when Pogba came on, played higher up on the pitch. I thought they were brilliant. They were fantastic. And on this show, I've been critical of Solskjaer at times, but I really have to give him a lot of credit for that win. It was really good. And PSG were shocking. They were really, really poor. Collectively, there was nothing. Individually, Neymar and Mbappe wanted to do their own things on their own. Of course, there are chances, and De Gea had to pull out some good saves because there's still a lot of talent in that team. But I thought Tuchel got the starting 11 wrong. He got his substitution wrong. I thought Neymar and Mbappe, like I said, tried far too hard individually to make a difference. And I just didn't recognize the team that we saw in the final eight that finally found, or so we thought, that team spirit, the collectiveness, the unity that they were lacking for so many years, and that was gone against United.
Frank, you hammered the PSG players on yesterday's show, but let's focus on Tuchel here, because as Jules says, Tuchel getting outmanaged by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not something I think a lot of people would have had in their bingo card of this match, and yet it happened. Where does it leave Tuchel and PSG?
Well, we saw him lots of time, you know, sitting on the bench, in fact, wondering what he could do. And I think he cannot do anything. And I don't know if one coach can do something about Paris Saint-Germain. We thought maybe, as Jules said, that in the final eight he find a solution. But it's really up to the players what's going to happen on the field with Paris Saint-Germain. Manchester United made the perfect game because they knew that they had to wait for Paris Saint-Germain and work in contra-attack where they are the best of. And they did very well. And you can say that because Navas was the best Paris Saint-Germain player during that game. But it's complicated when you're coach of Paris Saint-Germain to make sure you're going to have a squad team, a teamwork and a team effort together when you have two players who are absolutely fantastic players, but absolutely do whatever they want. So that's the main problem. It's not only offensively, it's also defensively. It's always they don't defend, they don't care, they walk, they complain, they cry, they try to dribble, to play only individually, you know, like how many players I'm going to take on. And if it works, they're absolutely fantastic. But if it doesn't work, it's a problem. And when you have when you don't have Marquinhos and Verratti, who are also leaders, but more a little bit more for Marquinhos than Verratti defensively, you are in danger. It's what happened to Paris Saint-Germain. So you have to make sure you build something to, in fact, prevent all Neymar and Mbappe miss out. That's the thing. That's the thing you have to do, because otherwise you're going to have problems. It's what happened against Manchester United.
Jules, Neymar, no goals in his last four Champions League matches. Mbappe, no goals in his last six Champions League matches. If you ever thought they were going to get healthy and have a good one, it was against this Manchester United with all of their issues at the back, and yet it didn't go that way. We can focus on Tuchel for sure, but how much criticism should those two specifically be getting?
They're the leaders, so they deserve to be criticized, and rightly so. There was a lot made in France, by some of the numbers behind Kylian Mbappe's performance. For example, the fact that he ran only 7.5 kilometers when Marcus Rashford, for example, ran 9.7 kilometers. When Rashford made 44 sprints at high intensity, Mbappe made only 22. And of course, the two styles and the game plans were different because PSG had a lot of the ball when United played on the counter-attack. So when you counter, you run more, of course, and you made a higher number of sprints because that's what you do. You make sprints forward because you play on the counter. I get that. However, those numbers are really extreme, far too extreme at that level. And we can say that Mbappe didn't do enough, certainly when he didn't have the ball. I do think, though, that when you insist so much individually on the ball when you try to dribble, it's also because there's no game plan behind. If there was a proper structure in place, if there was a pattern of play for PSG, I don't think Neymar and Mbappe will use the ball individually so much and just go into those slaloms or dribbling runs, for example, because there will be something around them. There will be more movement, more runs, more options, more solutions for them to pass the ball to, which is not the case, certainly was not the case against United. So, of course, they have to be criticised and take the blame, some of the blame, because they are the leaders, because they are incredible players, far better than what they showed on Tuesday night. However, I still think as well that if you don't give them a pattern of play, a style of football, some movement around them, they can't do much more than just trying to do it on their own.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Plenty more from Jules over on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, dropped Thursday morning. They're talking Real Madrid, they're talking El Clasico, and they're joined by Alex Kirkland.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Plenty of Europa League action on Thursday in Group B. That meant a 2-1 away win for Arsenal against Rapid Vienna, though they had to come from behind. Goals from David Luiz and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang as the Gunners get the 3 points to start group play. We welcome back Don, Rabo, and Xhaka. Rabo, I'll start with you. Arsenal in that match didn't have Mesut Ozil. He wasn't on the 11. He wasn't in the 18. He's not in their Premier League or their Europa League 25-man rosters. A lot is being made of this, Rabo. Is it the right call for Arteta? Not just to leave him out, but to totally leave him out.
Well, only he knows what's going on behind the scenes, because before lockdown, Arteta was a big part of the side. Something happened during lockdown where Mesut Ozil didn't keep himself fit enough, came back with the wrong attitude. Whatever it is, he's a decent enough player that you would have him in the squad if his attitude was right. So I'd imagine that Mikel Arteta is not happy with his attitude, he's not happy with his fitness, he's not happy what he can bring with the team. And rather than have all the speculation week in, week out, is Mikel Arteta going to play, is Ozil going to play, he's now said, no, I'm going to leave him out the squad, he's not part of the team, he's going to be going when his contract's up, I'm just going to forget him and I'm going to get on with the players that I've got who want to play for Arsenal and are playing very well at the moment for Arsenal. So he's probably made the right call on the basis of what we've seen from Mesut Ozil over the last few months.
Don, if you're Arsenal, you're already paying Mesut Ozil, why not take him along just in case? Why not throw him on these rosters? You could certainly see a game, a situation where you got 20, 30 minutes left, you bring him off the bench and he serves some use. Why take a useful tool and put it in the shed?
Seb, football's not a charity. I mean, listen, Arsenal are building something special.
He's a World
Cup
winner. Certainly he can be useful to a team that was eighth in the Premier League last year. We're not
talking... They're building it without Mesut Ozil. I don't even see where the conversation or the debate is going. I don't think you have Mesut Ozil anywhere near this squad. Mikel Arteta is building something special. He's got four or five young kids that are outstanding. Why on earth would you bring Mesut Ozil back into the squad, back into your match day squad, back into your 11 potentially, and then have to carry him as a passenger? Arsenal have been carrying Mesut Ozil for about 5 or 6 years. The guy on his day is an unbelievable footballer, and when he finishes, people will say what a career he's had. At the moment, as Robbo said, we don't know the figures and how his fitness is, but I guess he's nowhere near at the fitness levels or the standards of Mikel Arteta wants. Otherwise, Mikel Arteta would put him in the 25-man squad. It's not a charity.
Right. Xhaka, passenger or not, are you telling me there are 25 players that are better than Mesut Ozil right now on Arsenal?
No, there's not. Mesut Ozil at 100%, no. Mesut Ozil at 75%, my answer is still no. But I'm with Don here. I think Mesut Ozil has become too much of a distraction, a highly paid distraction. If you want highly paid players around, they've got to be on the field and contributing. Just look at Aubameyang. Other than that, it becomes too much of a distraction to the young players and Mikel Arteta's long-term vision for this football club. I'm in total agreement with everything Don just said. I wouldn't have him anywhere near my dressing room. I wouldn't have him near the training ground. As far as I'm concerned, you could stay home. We'll pay you because we have no other choice. But I'm going to build around this team, around this 25, for the long term, and nothing about long term or medium term includes Mesut Ozil.
Rubble, I'm trying to assign responsibility here. I want to read you a quote. It's from Arteta, and it's about Ozil. My job is to get the best out of every player. Here, I feel at the moment that I have failed. Do you agree with that? Has Arteta in some way failed to get the best out of Ozil?
You can only fail if the player wants to become better, wants to be part of it, wants to be fit. No one will know whether that's the case. He may have been badly treated by Arsenal in terms of when he's been injured. They've put out statements that, you know, he's got a bad back again. They were almost sort of saying that he wasn't injured and he didn't like playing away from home. That was the implication of some of the things they were putting out. So maybe Mesut Ozil got upset with that. But football now is a game where you have to be athletic. You have to work hard when you haven't got the ball. We've seen that from the very best teams. Look at Liverpool. Every player has to work hard to win the ball back. Mesut Ozil, over the last 5 or 6 years, he did it when he first came to Arsenal. Last 5 or 6 years, he hasn't closed the ball down. He hasn't got good enough defensive qualities. And that's why Mikel Arteta is building an athletic side that pressed the ball high up the field. He can't put him in the squad.
All right, elsewhere in the Europa League on Thursday, Spurs get a pretty easy win. We get, Don, our first look at Gareth Bale in that number 9 for Tottenham. How'd he play?
He done quite well, Seb. He had some good touches. He ran with the ball loads of times. Tricky when the ball was at his feet. You can see that he's not 100%. But he done quite well. I think he'll be happy with the work, and that's minutes in the bank for him. There were some good performances, though. I thought Reguilon at left back, he was outstanding. And a player that would probably go under the radar, I think, for most fans across the Premier League is Pierre Hoybier in midfield. I mean, he goes through some serious work and does all the hard work. He got a cut to his head tonight, so he was brave. You know, he was strong in midfield. And Vinicius, who led the line instead of Harry Kane, who now actually Tottenham fans can look forward to seeing Harry Kane getting a rest in these sort of games. And Jose can rest Harry Kane. Vinicius led the line really well. Son come off the bench and got his goal. Moura looked sharp. The game that I watched tonight, I thought Tottenham were in third or fourth gear. They had loads of gears if they really wanted to go for them. But a very professional performance from Spurs.
Robbo, you had an eye on Celtic and AC Milan. Milan pick up the 3-1 victory. 21 games unbeaten across all competitions. 17 of those matches ended in wins for Milan. This team is for real, aren't they?
Certainly in the first half in this game, they dominated possession. Celtic weren't quite sure whether to press them, to back off. They got caught out in no man's land at times, and it was too easy for Milan to play their football. Teo Hernandez kept on getting forward down the left-hand side. They sort of almost play, it's a back four, but then it becomes a three with Teo Hernandez getting forward. Ibrahimovic led the line, as he has done recently, just bringing others into play. But the second half, Celtic got at them. They started to get much tighter. They were brave. They got their fullbacks higher up the field, and Milan struggled. But it was that performance against Inter that said that Milan, at the moment, are a very good side.
Now, we know that they're a very good side because they were fourth in last week's Shaka Power rankings. As for this week's Shaka Power rankings, Shaka, where's Milan moving? I'm assuming up. The question is, how far?
They're in two, Sebi. I tell you what, I'm still showing a whole lot of love to Aston Villa. No Champions League action for them, no Europa League either in terms of pairing up with Milan. But after you beat Liverpool and Leicester, I think you deserve to stay exactly where you are. Milan at 2, Leipzig in a 3. Bayern Munich, I think, they were 8th last week. They're up to 4th after... again, convincing in both league and European action. Everton, Benfica, who started 100% and good in the Europa League as well. Lille, 7th. But Olympiacos in at 8th. They've only dropped 2 points this season. Atalanta have rebounded. They're in at 9. And I'm showing some love to Sassuolo as they sit 2nd in Serie A. I'm not sure how long I can cling to Sassuolo, so I'm going to show them a whole lot of love this week anyway.
Don, you were bitter last week when Shaka had Everton number 2. You must be bitter now.
How have they dropped down to, what was it, 5th? How have they done that? I mean, I agree with Villa. And Shaka's shown a lot of love for some Italian side, which is good to see. But I can't really argue with too many of those picks. I've got to say, Atalanta I thought might have been a little bit higher, but they got spanked at the weekend off Napoli. So, I think Shaka's done a pretty good job there.
Wow, pretty good job.
Thank you, Don.
from a colleague on ESPN FC about your power ranking, Shaka. That's got to be a highlight for sure. All right, plenty more from this group.
That's an absolute first. It really is.
We'll see if we get any more firsts in today's edition of Extra Time. Robbo.
Just don't ask Tio. That's all. Just keep Robbo out of it.
And Don are back.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
72 hours of Calcio this weekend on ESPN Plus and the ESPN family of networks. Action starts Friday. Sassuolo against Torino ends Monday. AC Milan against Roma, and the defending champions Juventus will play Sunday afternoon in Turin against Hellas Verona. For more, we welcome back Don Hutchison and Stuart Robson. Robbo, you're going to be calling that Juventus match. No Ronaldo. Plus, you got Barcelona midweek. This could be tricky for Juve and Andrea Pirlo.
It certainly could. They played well in midweek. They got that 2-0 victory, but they've the good thing is Morata is a confidence player. He's now scored 3 goals in 2 games, and if he leads the line, I think he's going to get better and better. We're still not seeing too much of Dybala. I'd like to see him play a little bit more, but they've got several injuries. Talk about Ronaldo being out. They've also got Chiellini, who pulled his hamstring in midweek in the Champions League. So I don't think we certainly don't know what Pirlo's going to pick at the moment. We don't know what his best formation is. He's gone from a back three to a back four. So he's still trying to find out the best team, the best formation, and that's why Hellas Verona, who are seventh in the table, have got a chance of causing an upset, because we're not seeing the best of Juventus at the moment.
Full weekend in Serie A, also a full weekend on ESPN Plus in the Bundesliga. We've got Leipzig and Munich in action on Saturday, and then I think the game that most people are focused on, one of the great derbies in German football, Schalke and Dortmund. Although, Don, it's not quite the derby it used to be, is it?
No, it's not. They call it the mother of all derbies, and rightly so, because there's been some unbelievable fixtures. I've seen a 7-0, I've seen 6-1. I think the scariest one was a couple of years back when Borussia Dortmund went 4-0 up inside 25 minutes and drew the game 4-4. So this is a fixture that's always been spicy. I would imagine there's going to be loads of goals in this one. Hard to predict. If I was going to lean anywhere, I'd lean towards Dortmund, but Dortmund are the type of side, whenever you back them, they can throw a spanner in the works and they can upset the odds at any given time, because they have got a bad result in them. But it should be a good game.
Friday again, when all the action starts on ESPN+. Here's a quick look at the Friday slate. Gets underway at 2:30 p.m. Eastern time as Stuttgart hosts Cologne. Plenty of action from across the championship, Serie A, and of course, Major League Soccer. Nashville and New England meet at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time in the evening. All right, that's all the time we've got for today's edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to everyone involved in the show. However, those that you just heard from, Stuart Robson and Don Hutchison, they're not done yet. We're joined by Shaka Hislop on today's edition of Extra Time. Enjoy. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into today's edition of Extra Time here on ESPN FC. Thanks to you for sending in your questions via Twitter, and thanks to our trio that have joined us for today's session. We got Stuart Robson, Shaka Hislop, Don Hutchison with us. Our first question, Robbo, is for you. And of course, our listeners and viewers here on this show, they have a long memory. They have a long memory. They remember back to last year when you said Zidane would be fired, what was it, before the fall was over, after the Atletico Madrid preseason drubbing. We all remember, 7-3. Robbo, will your last year's prediction about Zidane come true this time around? So you nailed it, just off by 12 months.
Well, if he survived that first period last season when they were all over the place and he was having problems with Gareth Bale, he was having problems with James Rodriguez, it was a fight between those two players and the board, and he got past that and they obviously won La Liga. I think he can be there as long as he wants to at the moment. The team aren't playing particularly well. They're not doing well in La Liga. They had a poor performance, terrible performance against Shakhtar Donetsk. I think he will stay that little bit longer, but he needs to get the team to improve, that's for sure.
Right, anything you say on this show can and will be used against you. Next question. Yesterday, Ale said that Bayern are the best team in the world by a country mile. Don, do you agree with that?
I agree 100%. I commentate on their game against Atletico Madrid the other night, and they blew them away. I mean, they won by 4, Seb, but it could have been 6 or 7. I mean, Thomas Muller is in the form of his life. This was out. Gnabry, who was away, I think he had tested positive for COVID. Lewandowski was quite quiet leading the line, but Kingsley Coman was amazing. Across the back four, they were just solid as a rock. And one player that's playing at the moment who sometimes takes the armband, sometimes he doesn't, is Joshua Kimmich. And he will go down in Bayern's Hall of Fame. He's a clone of Philipp Lahm. And he was unbelievable in that central midfield role, as was Leon Goretzka and Tolisso, who got goals. I don't see anyone in Europe, you know, matching Bayern at the moment. I think we think all of the big teams, we think of Real Madrid and Barcelona and Liverpool and Man City, they're all going through their little bit of problems, if you like, a little bit of inner turmoil. Bayern are just a machine that just steamrolls everyone, and they've certainly done that midweek.
Look at us going out on a limb. Bayern Munich, the defending champions of Europe, are the best team in the world by a country mile. Boy, that is unique analysis. You can really only get it here. Let me ask this then, Don. You can't use Xhaka's power rankings as a cheat sheet. So who's the second best team in the world, the country mile behind Bayern?
I mean, I would still say Liverpool, but I mean, now we've took Virgil van Dijk out of the equation for a season. I think it brings everyone into the equation. I commentated on Juve against Crotone, and I don't see Pirlo's men being that strong this season. I don't really see anyone from Italy getting close to Bayern. I'd probably say it's going to have to be Pep's year this year if he's going to do it at all. So I'd probably say between Man City and Liverpool.
Xhaka, I heard a groan there. Did you have a thought?
No, I thought that was a really good question as to who's second, because I'm in total agreement. Bayern are the best team in the world by a long way. And then there's a big bunch in the chasing pack. And it's a matter of you know, take your pick. You could... Liverpool is who I'd lean for right now, but they just got over a 7-2 beating at the hands of Aston Villa. It seems like only yesterday, and just about everybody else in world football, you can point a bad result over the last two or three weeks. And yeah, it's just a really tight pack, and take your pick.
Ravo, take your pick from these three: a 30-yard thunderbolt, overhead kick, or bullet header. Which is your favorite?
It's got to be a 30-yard thunderbolt. Mm. Struck really nicely into the corner. It always looks good. The overhead kick, some you miss. it's a hit and miss situation. Bullet headers, always good to see. But a 30-yard thunderbolt would be my pick to watch any day of the week.
Don, you with him on that?
I'm not, actually. I seen Tolisso score for Bayern midweek, and he put a rocket into the top corner from about 30-odd yards. But my memory is the Champions League and winning goals that stand out a country mile was the Dans in the Champions League final against Leverkusen up at Hampden. Gareth Bale's overhead kick against Liverpool. Those are the best goals.
Xhaka, if you're going to give up a goal, which is the way you'd least like to give it up? The thunderbolt, the overhead kick, or the bullet header?
The least favorite way is from 30 yards. Overhead kicks are always difficult to predict, because once the player goes up in the air, you're never quite sure how the ball is going to come off their foot, which direction is going. So you can't move or take a position. And a bullet header from, you know, reasonable distance, you just kind of hoping to react or hoping it hits you. But if somebody's hitting it from 30 yards, you know, more times than not, you've seen it come all the way. And so, out of the three, that's the one you're most likely going to be expected to save. So that's the one you don't want to be conceding.
Don, who's the best center half in the Premier League now that Virgil van Dijk is out?
Oh, my days. What a question that is. I mean, is it too early to go for Ruben Dias?
Wow. It's
is it too early? Is it too early? I mean, Chelsea, no. Arsenal, no. Man City, Liverpool.
Rabo?
Oh, my days.
You got any names to throw in that list?
It's a very difficult question. There aren't too many good top-class centre-halves in the Premier League at the moment. There's the one they're all talking about at Leeds, White, who could go a long way. He's a young player who could be a top-class player at some point, but he's not the finished article yet. We all talked about Harry Maguire, but he's had a terrible period, so it's not him. It's a very difficult one to answer. Van Dijk was head and shoulders above everybody else.
Shaka, is that just it? Are there no good centre-halves in the Premier League?
Right now, I'm thinking Thiago Silva, and I'm, you know, just kind of searching around the rest of the league to see who else is up there. But it's telling when we're talking about Thiago Silva as possibly being
at 36,
the best remaining centre-back in the league.
Yeah. Okay, Rabo, Yusuf wants to know, who is the favourite player that you love to watch in Serie A, and why is it Chucky Lozano?
It's certainly not Lozano. No, I can tell you that's not the case.
I'm done with this segment then. Forget it. You can keep talking, but I don't care. If it's not Chucky, it doesn't count.
At the moment, one of the most influential players in Serie A is Kessié, who's playing in midfield. He's not a great technician, but he's doing a magnificent job for AC Milan at the moment. He's doing everything you want from a midfield player. He's winning the ball back. He's showing great energy. He's breaking the opposition's attacks down. He's getting forward at the same time. And he's been dominant. And that's why one of the reasons why AC Milan are top of the table, because of his dominant midfield displays.
Robbo, can I chuck Papu Gomez in there? I love watching
absolutely. Papu Gomez, yeah, go on, you say it, Don, exactly what he is.
He's a brilliant technician.
He runs Atalanta.
Every time I watch him, mate, you know where he's like, he's just little number 10, just floats around the place. Absolute genius.
Next question, Don, is for you. How many Liverpool legends, other than Souness, have punched Don?
This comes from a story that Jeremy Redknapp told a couple of days ago, and it's actually true, where Graeme Souness was trying to sell me to Southampton in a swap deal for Tim Flowers, and I refused to go. I didn't want to go to Southampton, and so I blocked sort of Tim Flowers' move. So a few days later, we had a seven-a-side at Melwood in training, and Graeme Souness actually joined in. And Graeme Souness picked himself to play on the opposition side to me. And about 15, 20 minutes into a five-a-side game, the ball has broke right in between me and Graeme Souness. And he two-footed me. Right up in the air. And I fell on top of him. And he grabbed me by the neck. And he punched me in the face for not moving to Southampton. So I've then swung at him. And I've tried to have a little punch at Graeme. He's the manager of Liverpool. And I'm trying to punch him. And he's punching me, and the two of us were like a cartoon. There was like crash, bang, wallop. There was signs going up everywhere. And the two of us got split apart. And then Shaka, the best thing was, Graeme Souness said, he'll be playing on Saturday. I wish you cared as much as he does. And he played me on the Saturday.
Wow.
Yes, Gaffer.
Oh, goodness.
Wow, that is... high-level stuff. I mean, to punch a manager in the face and then get the start.
Even then, as manager at Liverpool, I would have Souness in a fight with Don. I'd still back. I'll back Souness now in a fight with Don.
Oh, Shaka, I was desperate for the fight to be broken up because he would have battered me.
Sure. Punching managers or assistant managers is something that this panel knows quite a bit about, right, Rabo?
Yes, another Liverpool legend. Unfortunately, he was then the assistant manager of Coventry, and I was the captain of Coventry, and it was Phil Neal. We had a little bit of an argument in the manager's office, and he came across to me, and I thought he was going to punch me. He actually wasn't going to punch me, and I punched him first. And Bobby Gould threatened to call the police for assault. And then the next minute phones up the tea lady and says, bring a couple of cups of tea up and a packet of chocolate biscuits. And the next thing, we're out on the training field. And Phil's throwing the ball to me. Little volleys.
Did you start on the weekend, though?
Never quite saw eye to eye with Phil.
Did you start on the weekend, though, Rob?
No, it was because I was injured, and that was the whole reason the argument took place. And I said, if you make me train, you'll regret it. Mm. And... Hence, Peter Unlove got taken off the training field on a stretcher about 10 minutes later.
And that's why,
which wasn't
and that's why, Sebi, and that's why, Sebi, we say footballers these days, they have gone soft. Mm. They're not fighting their managers like we did.
Boy, we have some anger management issues to work through with HR on the back end of this ESPN FC show. Final question then. Chelsea goalie Mendy has 2 clean sheets in 2 games, so why doesn't he and Chelsea get credit, asks Harry. Xhaka, with Cech and Buffon playing, how about a comeback?
Wait.
I know, there's a lot to unpack.
I'm not sure what you want me to address there.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much to address about the Mendy and Chelsea. What about your comeback? You're in pretty good shape right now, right? We've seen you do hockey for the show. I mean, you're pretty
well.
Pretty good shape.
I've been considering it strongly, Seb. I'm ready.
Uh-huh.
I'm available to make a comeback.
Really?
We had a clip of me playing in the Cayman Islands last year.
We did.
Thought a few managers would have taken note of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you supposed to fall when you dive?
Let's go back to last week, Seb, when we were talking about having regret about retiring. Did you miss it? And Xhaka said that he knew when it was time to retire, that last year at West Ham. And I said then, and it's still the case, that every West Ham supporter I spoke to said he should have retired about 3 years earlier. So there's no chance that Xhaka should be making a comeback.
Ah, man. Well,
think about the dollars. Robbo,
I've got my gloves. Hold on. I've got my gloves right here.
Oh, yeah. Show us, Xhaka. Show us your gloves, because we didn't believe you were a goalie before. We thought
you were
some
gloves right here, just in case, baby. Ooh. I'm ready.
Wow. Wow, did we just get a brand?
I've always got them on me, just in case, just in case, you never know.
Yeah, sounds good. Mm-hmm. All right, maybe we'll have a little pickup game in tomorrow's show. Might have to throw the gloves on, you never know. We will be back, plenty more to look forward to on the weekend at Clásico, United, Chelsea, much more. We'll see you then.